It is 8:32 here on the Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio, and as we have just explained on the air, is that in our conference room where we do all the interviews, the headphone amplifier, I was out for 2 days, and not that we would have known anyways because it's only used when somebody goes in there, which is only a few times a week. The headphone amplifier is not working, so nobody in that room can hear anything. So that means that this show is going to be basically our good friend Janet Manco. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning. And, you know, luckily the newspaper speaks for itself.
But, yeah.
You know, we'll do the best we can here.
Yeah.
My only question is, can't Cynthia or Alexander call in like I do, or do you only have one line for that?
It's hard for them to do it because they'd have to use their cell phone, and we can't use an in-house phone line because there'd be a second delay, even though it's in the house. But the phone call leaving, going to the – it would have been a mess. It would have been
– it'd be like it was an international correspondent. There's
you each would have had to wait like 3 seconds to respond. It would have been a traffic. It would have been a traffic jam. So, I said,
yeah. Luckily, as I say, the paper speaks for itself. There's plenty in here to talk about. They will know more about it and be more interesting about it. But we'll make your listeners want to run out and buy the paper. Right?
That's exactly right. So we'll
play the exercise.
There's plenty of stories to talk about, especially on one. Especially, we'll start off with Region 1. A couple of big stories to talk about. First of all, Pam Vogel announced her retirement at a very hectic meeting of the ABC committee, which was very unexpected by all, I think, that retirement. And she's going to be retiring at the end of the year.
Right. And so Patrick Sullivan has a story about this. And it's quite understandable when you read about the reason she's doing it, including you know, her mother has health issues she wants to go and help take care of, et cetera. So, you know, she even took a moment to refer to Assistant Superintendent Lisa Carter as a wonderful candidate for the position, and we'll see if Assistant Superintendent Carter is interested in that.
You know, I think it's funny. When I heard this announcement, I thought to myself, you know what they should do and take their time, and this is just my opinion, at the end of the year, right now, name Lisa Carter the interim superintendent. Give her 1 year, let her, and during that year, you can do some candidate searches and see what's out there, but possibly give Lisa Carter, the first shot at the job.
Yeah, it seems so likely that's what will happen because it is short timing to find someone to come in new.
Because they don't start next September. They start this summer.
They do. And it's just, it's certainly, no matter what happens, the assistant superintendent will take over many of the duties, and so that may as well be recognized. So let's hope it is.
And what I like, though, is Brian Bartram said that whatever search they do, they want to involve. They want it to be a little more open, and possibly include some members once of the community again. So, I think that I would think that Lisa's going to get the job on an interim basis, and then I think she would be the leading candidate going in when they do a full candidate search that they could do next year to set up for the following year. So that's a story that will follow. Obviously, over the course of the next month or so.
Yes, it'll go on and on. And Lisa is so well qualified, and I'll say she was one of my daughter's favorite teachers when she was at Hoosie.
All right. Now, also Region 1 got out in front of a potential problem that you just don't know, but there was a letter issued on coronavirus and exactly how they're looking at it, what they might possibly do. And they offered some options for parents and grandparents and students themselves of the region.
Right. This was a very responsible step, and many school systems are doing this because, that is the place in every community where the most people come together every day. And, you just don't know when something is going to come into the group that you're not prepared for. So, it came from Superintendent Pam Vogel, and she said that she and business manager Sam Herrick met with custodians and representatives from the Torrington Department of Health and figured out measures, and they are in containment mode, and it's very thorough. So do give this a read, if, even if you think, well, you know, we don't have to worry about that now. It's always better to be prepared and worry about it before you actually need to. So give this a read, and it has good information in there for the general public as well.
And sticking with Region 1 and Housatonic, the travel club, which was going to go to Italy, that trip is now – they've changed the destination for it. And they're going to Scotland. That's what they're going to do with that trip. And obviously, if something happens in Scotland, they'll keep their eye on it. But for parents that are concerned about the students that were going to go on the trip to Italy, the destination has been changed for that trip.
And so, when is that trip?
I don't have it right in front of me.
But, yeah, I think it's April. It's pretty soon.
But they've changed the destination for it. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, and they'll still learn a lot and have a great time. And let's hope that Scotland doesn't have the same issues that Italy and Iran and other countries are having right now. But time will tell.
We might as well, because most of this front page is devoted to Housatonic in Region 1. The middle school sport effort now continues, and they're going to put this together, and they are going to allow Kent to participate on a limited basis if they want to. And if any other people from towns want to participate, they're going to allow that. So they're continuing now to set up that model, and it looks like that model will be in place hopefully for the beginning of next year.
Right, which is actually a good next step, and Patrick Sullivan writes about it in depth. Give it a read and, keep an eye on it, and we'll see what happens with that. But certainly they've come together for a cooperation that seems like it could work at least for the next year.
Now, I knew that this was going to – when I saw the agenda for the Board of Education meeting, and that they were going to look at cutting certain programs – to help budget-wise, and football was on that. And even though football has been in decline in participation from Region 1, I knew that that would bring out a lot of people to the meeting, and a lot of people did show up at the meeting, and there was a lot of support for it. What's interesting about the football program, Janet, is that, of course, it was an extremely successful program for a small school, winning many titles at 1 year, going to the state championship game against much larger schools. But, of course, the population decrease affected the program, that they tried a co-op program. But then they stopped it for 2 years completely. And when you stop a program for 2 years completely, boy, nowadays – it is extremely hard because not only Housatonic has a problem like that, but surrounding schools has the same problem with attendance and with the amount of students. It's really hard to start it back up again, and it's been struggling. But it looks like they'll look at the budget and see if they can continue on with it, because there are two other teams that join in. But I just knew that was going to be a hot button topic. That's like, remember, Janet, every year that they always used to put German on the agenda and parents would show up and say, "Hey, listen, it's our tax dollars. We want to pay for this."
Right. But football, there are other issues too. I mean, it was always fun. We would go to the Thanksgiving Day games and hear you doing the commentating, and it was great, the Berkshire Bowl. But there are other issues, the Pop Warner teams that feed these high school teams have to be in place and active, and there's controversy around having young students play the game now because of the fear of injury and not enough safety issues being taken. So all of that is part of that equation.
And, of course, well, Parati is a big supporter of that, mentioning about how many players went on to play in much bigger schools. So that's something that we'll follow. You know what's great about this, though? And it always amazes me. You want to see people turn up and talk about budget items, because normally these budget meetings are not attended by anybody.
That's right, until it's, too late or almost too late, where things have been discussed already and decided upon, and then people sort of hear about it and think, oh, wait a minute, maybe we did want that football team. Remember when, So, yeah, it is great that about 30 people came out and really discussed it.
All right. Now, we'll go on because you've got a story, and it's great because the story is right above a picture of the fruit trees and some snow on the ground. But tips for staying safe on icy roads, even though we haven't had a horrible winter. It's not over yet, and we've still had icy roads. So you've got a story about, hey, staying safe on icy roads.
Right. Lance Christensen, our reporter, went to Lime Rock Park for a winter driving clinic and got some tips. And, you know, sometimes in a winter where you haven't had as much ice and snow, it can be all the more dangerous when it does get slippery because you're just not used to it. We're even hearing predictions of possible icy roads on, you know, tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, it's March and anything can happen, and it's always good to keep in mind. And all of these things apply – all of these approaches to safe driving apply, you know, in dry weather, but also rainy weather and other conditions. But it is unique for the way you respond on icy roads. So give that a read.
All right. And, of course, then you've got Nature's Notebook on the cusp of spring.
Yeah, with a question mark after it. Yeah. So this is Tim Abbott, of course, and we love having him write for us. He does make looking forward to spring even more fun than all of us think it is. This is, I'll mention that this is the weekend that we go to daylight saving time, and we have that on our front page. So don't forget to do that, but that does make us think, you know, spring is just about here. So
that always,
about that.
That always screws us up with our good friend Arjun over in India, where we always misconnect on that day because
I bet.
It's a big difference. But then, once again, if you've got fruit trees, Peter Montgomery, taking care of those fruit trees in springtime.
Right, and the early months of the year are the right time to prune them, and no matter if you know what the weather is doing, this is the time to look at them and prepare them for the summer, and you'll get the best yield. So, yeah, Peter Montgomery is an expert, of course. He has his own orchard and gives some great tips here.
On the inside, Olivet University, which is right across the state line, has pled guilty, a complete 180-degree turn from when they went in and said that they weren't guilty. They've pled guilty, and they're going to pay a big fine. They paid a fine also a little earlier on, if you remember, about a month and a half, 2 months ago. I think the final fine for the work, the unauthorized work they allowed to happen at their campus when in Wingdale.
That's right. This story, of course, originates from our Millerton News. Editor Whitney Joseph over there wrote this story, and it's a big story in that newspaper. Yes, in December 2018, the school issued a statement saying, Olivet University denies the charges announced and looks forward to being fully vindicated in court. And so now the guilty plea comes following a 15-month-long investigation into the connections that led to them pleading guilty to money laundering. So this is a fascinating story. Read it carefully, and we always take with a grain of salt what's happening in the courts until they're done. Yeah.
Mary Kate Kosciuszko out of Cornwall is going to bike across the United States.
Isn't that great? Yeah. I mean, I think that's something that even those of us who aren't necessarily great bikers think, boy, that is something great, and wouldn't everybody like to do that at some point in their lives? So we're happy to know she's doing this. She's a UConn medical student, and we hope to hear from her. She's making her trip.
And once again, five stars for Kent. Whatever they put on, they get massive turnout. 600 runners turn out for the Polar Bear Run.
Yes, and Lance Christensen in Kent got some great photos of those who had a lot of fun running in this race. And he has the winners there. Beautiful day they had for the run. Fantastic turnout and funds raised for Guiding Eyes for the Blind.
This is a great series that they're putting together in Sharon. That's Sharon Voices series. They kicked it off with Barclay Prindle, and I think next on this will be Ed Kirby. And you could interchange either one of them, and you know you're going to get an incredible history of Sharon.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And so, right, read these side by side. And, you know, all the more fun when you get these two guys together in a room and they can reminisce. But This is a great story by Lila Hawken, hearing what Barclay Prindle remembers about how Sharon was. And after he talks, he can go outside and see things in Sharon in a whole new way.
You know, another story that comes out of Sharon, and the reason I want to comment on this ourselves, as we rent, we as a nonprofit, we rent from the town of Sharon. And our rent goes into a fund to pay what happens at the building. And our rent is at a reasonable rate, and when we always appreciate that. So our work with Sharon as being inside how what we maintain and what Sharon maintains really helps us have a home that's affordable. And now there's some other cultural centers in Sharon, like the Hotchkiss Library, that are looking for some support. And once again, our good friends at the Sharon Playhouse are looking for $5,000 to support children's programming and things like that. And I know it's economically tough times, but I think that the town of Sharon can be beneficial in helping these requests. You know, it's an interesting story that you have in the paper.
It is, that Lila Hawken wrote, and, you know, you look at these organizations, the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and the Sharon Playhouse, and think about how much they do for not just the Sharon community, but the entire surrounding tri-state area to bring people into Sharon, to help the businesses there, and to keep the community active. So that is all part of the decision-making process. And, yeah, it does seem as if it's something that would be beneficial to the community in the long run and worth the investment.
And I don't want people to think the library is not asking for they're asking for an increase of $10,000 in the support.
Yes, right.
And $5,000 from the Sharon Playhouse. It's not a lot of money. I know things are tight, but this is what makes Sharon has really come a long way in the past 10 years. I mean, you have a business district now that's not only at the shopping center but in the center of town. You've got the Playhouse operating now basically 12 months a year, and the Hotchkiss Library operates programs basically 7 days a week. So I mean,
yeah, which makes such a difference to the economy of the town and the area. You know, those first 3 months of the year can be so challenging for everybody, but you know, these organizations make them better and more active.
All right, teaching critical thinking through storytelling at a Falls Village.
Isn't that great? This is Rita Delgado, the children's librarian at the Hunt Library, reading aloud classic books like Stone Soup. We have a great photo of her doing that, and we talk about the program and how Rita has made that program flourish and what she's doing right now for it. It's an inside scoop by Jenna Siller and really worth the read. I think a lot of people know Rita and know what she's done with kids over many years in the community. So it's fascinating and fun to read.
And you have a story about the Hotchkiss student, Abraham Keita. We interviewed him. I am so impressed with this student, a young man who is now a man of the world, really.
Oh, that's for sure. And when you read about a student, you know, a young man fighting for children's rights globally, well, you know, this is a fascinating person and certainly understands what he believes in and what should happen in the world. It's a great read, and he's a fascinating guy. From Liberia.
And Patrick Sullivan's story on tracking the CIA through the decades.
Right. This was a program at the Scoville Library, and it was Locke Johnson who spoke about it. It's fascinating, isn't it, how we're hearing more and more about the CIA, whereas things used to be so secretive. Now, we're hearing more about how there might have been some beneficial effects from what the CIA did, rather than some of the less beneficial ones we've heard about. So this was an interesting talk, and he talked about the Cold War and just what he generally sees as a story that hasn't been told. So give it a read. Patrick Sullivan wrote this one.
You've got a story, of course, on the Troop 22 Pinewood Derby, and a great story about the documentary films that are giving voice to young people in our area.
Right. Well, what's more fun than the Pinewood Derby? And Sam Foley went, and I'm sure he remembers when he was a, you know, kid and part of that Pinewood Derby. It's so great for the adults and the young people who do it. So, right, give it a read, see who won, and take a look at those cards and see if you can make your own that would go super fast. And we have the Inside Scoop by Deborah Alexinis on Catherine Tatchy and Dominique Lesueur, who, you know, have done so much with the Civic Life Project for high school students all over the state. And this is a great piece that's very thorough and talks about the range of what they do and what the teens are like who take part in this program. And it's just anybody who has gone to any of the end of the school year events where the students present what they've done, you're just blown away by the level of professionalism they come out of it with and what they want to express, what they want to talk about and show the world, you know, about what is happening and how they see it. So great program, great interview with them.
And turning back to pages like this 100 years ago, the Lime Rock Thimble Club holding a regular meeting. Just now the members are sewing blocks to make a quilt, which they're going to sell. Now,
yeah, sounds like a great project.
Now, on the opinion pages and right opposite it, you've got an opinion about affordable housing, but also the picture of a new era for the Lakeville Journal's Old Home.
That's right. This week is the week, you know, that finally the building at 33 Bissell Street was taken down by Salisbury Bank. The bank bought it from the Lakeville Journal in 2017. And they had plans at that time, but I guess that it just took a while to pull everything together. And finally, it's beginning, and they will do an office building on that same footprint. It's an exciting time. We say a new era because that's really good for the bank and for that neighborhood. We love being part of that neighborhood and having, you know, the David Mafucci and Visionary Computer as neighbors and the bank. And it'll just make for a great destination point for the community at large and for the people who work at the bank, who are now many of them working in, you know, basement offices or not the ideal conditions in some of the bank buildings spread across the region. So this is great.
All right. And, of course, your editorial on affordable housing.
Right. We write about this periodically and thought this was a good time because so much of what has happened in Kent has made a difference for people looking for affordable housing there. And they've just had new units open up there, which Cynthia Hawkswinder wrote about last week. And it's under the leadership of Virginia Bush Sutman and all the volunteers at Kent Affordable Housing, and congratulations to them for what they've been able to do there. And and we talk a bit about the other pending projects in our towns, and you know, things are still being discussed in Falls Village, even though the first iteration of a project fell through there. But you know, anybody who knows anything about any new projects coming up, let us know. It's something that volunteers work on assiduously around here, and we just need more of it.
All right. And very quickly, only have about a minute or so left, but, of course, Compass.
Compass, which, you know, it's great to think about the arts this time of the year when you want to maybe, you know, we don't have cabin fever as badly as we might have if the weather was worse, but it's still a great time to take a trip down to New York and go to the Met. And we have Alexander Wilburn interviewing Gary Steinkohl about his favorite pieces at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And we have, so that is just great. It's a great way to spend a Sunday, read what he has to say, and go down and do it. I have a book review on a book by our longtime columnist, Peter Riva, Kidnapped on Safari. It's part of a series that he's written about life in Africa, East Africa. And boy, give it a read and think about reading his work. He's just fascinating. And we have a piece by Alexander Wilburn on Justin Bosito, who will perform Song and Dance Men at Sharon Playhouse on Saturday, March 21st. Fantastic photo of him doing a jump, and what's more fun than watching dance? And I want to mention quickly, we have our dining section too, Country Dining. Don't miss those restaurants that are open in March and will be there for you. And there's even a photo that Lance Christensen took just within the past week of people sitting and eating al fresco in Kent. So, yep, there's fun to be had supporting our local restaurants.
All right, Janet, great job. We'll speak to you again next week with everybody else.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal, tricornernews.com on the web.